Welcome back, humor consumers, to the Life Happens, Laugh Anyway podcast. I'm comedian Tracy DeGraff.
And I'm Catherine, co-host and bestie.
And tired.
I know. And in fact, when your voice came on.
Did it wake you up?
It did kind of jolt me a little bit, just because the energy level I don't feel like I can meet it.
Come on. Catherine is dragging.
I am. And
I'm a little tired too. It is the afternoon. Normally we're a little fresher in the morning when we record, so we apologize for that. If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome aboard to the Life Happens, Laugh Anyway podcast. We are two best friends that launched a podcast during the pandemic because there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. And here we are, 167 episodes later.
Yeah, and then 3 years later?
Yeah, we're still going.
Yeah.
And today,
can you believe it?
I can believe it. Actually, we're not very consistent about many things, but this we are. Yeah. And today is episode number 167. We're talking about panic attacks.
Look out, folks.
It's going to be very exciting. I'm going to give you a little rundown of what we're going to talk about, just so you know. First, we're going to talk about what panic attacks are and the symptoms so that you know if you're having one. But, you know, here's my thought to that. If you're having a panic attack, you're going to know. You're going to know something is majorly wrong.
Well, you're going to know something's wrong. But when you're in it, sometimes you don't know that it's a panic attack. You actually think you're having
a heart attack or death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, secondly, we're going to talk about our panic attacks, because guess what, friends? We've both had them multiple times.
Lucky for you, audience.
Yeah, so you get to hear about our personal experiences. And then we're also going to talk about what to do, which is always good to give a solution of some sort.
Yeah.
Not just pray about it.
Well, yeah, don't have coffee.
we're getting our coffee is being made as we speak. Muffin is home today, and it's a cold, dreary spring Chicago gray
windy
day. Mm. Yeah, it's windy, cold, wet, all that.
Yeah,
but so we're gonna get some coffee in here in a little bit once it's all brewed.
Thank God.
And then we'll perk up after that. You'll have to turn down the volume once we get the coffee in here. As always, we have a few scriptures to share with you at the end, so stay tuned for that, because that's the real good stuff. And then a call to action. Mm-hmm. Before we jump into this, though, Catherine, share with our listeners about our sponsorship program, please.
Ooh, I almost forgot.
Yeah.
Our sponsors contribute $5 a month, and they do that. They could do that on Patreon, or they could go to tracydegraff.com. It's super easy. Just follow the buttons, you know, the links, icons, and all of that. And that keeps us going.
It does.
We have a platform that we pay for.
We do.
And we just got new equipment, all because of our sponsors.
Yes, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just nice. Do you know that we got a donation of $1 last week from somebody that we don't know?
Really?
Yeah, we did. I forgot to tell you that.
Oh.
Because Catherine and I both had pretty busy weeks, and there was a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And I forgot to say, and I looked at this report, and I'm like, why are we getting, I thought I was getting scammed, actually.
Yeah, I would have thought that, too.
You know, like the one time when I got scammed on Facebook, they took out money, like 30 cents or something out of my account.
Mm-hmm.
And then later they took out $300. I'm like, wait a minute.
Talk about scam. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I look at my phone, just, I don't know, habit. And it said that it was from the IllinoisTollway.com and that I am overdue $12, and to avoid a $50 charge, click on this link. So I was super tired, but I'm looking at it. I'm like, I doubt that it's .com. Well, I looked into it. It's a scam? Well, it is IllinoisTollway.com, something like that. But this said, I think it said abbreviated Illinois. Mm-hmm. Incorrectly, for one thing. And then it said Tollway Services. So it was a scam? It was a scam.
Oh, my goodness. People get jobs like us.
That's their job.
Get jobs.
Scam us.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, until the coffee comes, we're just going to dive right in here to this episode on panic attacks. So, Catherine, what say you? What are panic attacks? What are the symptoms?
Panic attacks are brief periods of overwhelming fear or anxiety. The intensity of a panic attack goes well beyond normal anxiety and can include a number of physical symptoms. That's the part I hate.
Yeah, because it's bad enough to have a regular fear of something.
Yes.
But when you have a regular fear and there's an elephant sitting on your chest,
yeah,
that's a problem.
Right. During panic attacks, people often fear that they're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
They cannot breathe or they are dying.
Yeah, right.
All right. So, and then the symptoms of a panic attack.
Wait, back up 1 second.
Back it up.
1 second. The thing to remember, too, is you're having all these symptoms without a reason, like a rational reason for it, you know?
True. That is true.
Because you could be having the symptoms that you're about to describe, you could be having those and having an actual heart attack or stroke or something like that. Yeah.
The thing with panic attacks, though, they may feel scary, but they don't actually cause physical harm. The most common fears associated with panic attacks are heart attack and or fainting, but they're not actually a threat.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So what are the symptoms? What do they list for symptoms?
Okay. And also, I just want to say this too. A panic attack does not need to include all of these symptoms that I'm going to list,
okay,
by the way. Okay. So pounding or racing heart, sweating, trembling or shaking, fear of going crazy, feeling of being detached from reality.
Oh, yeah.
Breathing difficulties, sense of terror or impending doom or death, chest pain or discomfort, nausea, and fear of dying.
Yeah.
Not fun.
Not pleasant at all. And if you're listening and you've had this experience, you know exactly what it feels like to have a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I also have a couple of other things here. I don't know if you said this, a tightness in your throat can be evidence of a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Also shortness of breath, sweating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did say that one.
Yeah. So.
But the tightness in the throat, I did not say, but yeah, I can
relate to that.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's share a little bit about our own experiences. Tell me about your panic attack, okay, and then I'll tell you about mine.
Well, my first one that was out the roof. We were flying from England.
Oh, I remember the story.
Yeah. Back home to the U.S. And
now wait, so you had gotten there, obviously, and you've been back and forth to England over your lifetime
life,
because
right,
your mother was born and raised in England. So mm-hmm, you've been there many times and you never had a problem.
No, I would say, though, that I would get extremely excited and the hype would just be an exciting hype. I don't know. I guess when I got older. Well, then this was after 9/11, too. And after 9/11, I had nightmares. Like,
okay,
I had nightmares that I was one of the passengers that was crashing into one of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it, and I could... Anyway, the dream was so real. But when I'm on the plane, I don't think of that. I don't think of the plane as being hijacked. It's more like incompetent pilots, you know, things like that. The pilot's going to have a heart attack. Those are the kinds of things I think about, but maybe subconsciously, I don't know. But okay, so you brought up a good point that yes, we flew from the US to there and I had high anxiety, but and I did have Xanax, but I didn't know that the dose that was prescribed for me was way too little. It's like 0.25 and I took one
Was that for the flight? The Xanax was for the flight?
Yeah.
For flight anxiety?
Yeah.
So you did know ahead of time that you were a little nervous about flying.
Yeah, because I had developed this fear from the nightmares.
Since 9/11.
Since 9/11.
Okay. Makes sense.
Right.
Totally.
So I didn't think I was going to have a panic attack, though.
Yeah.
But I thought, why is this? It was the first time I ever had Xanax, and it was in 2003. And
Wait. Did you take one ahead of the flight to...
Yes.
Test it out and see how you felt?
Oh, no.
So the first time that you took it was when you were feeling anxious and it didn't do a darn thing.
Well, the flight is 8 hours.
Okay.
And I took it because I think the directions were something like 30 minutes or 10 minutes before the flight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, you're waiting on the tarmac for a long time and then you have the actual flight. Well, the stuff wore off, I'm sure. It just wasn't enough for the level of anxiety that I had.
Okay.
But that was just real anxiousness. So now we're on our vacation, and the entire time I'm dreading getting back on the plane. I still have nightmares about it to this day.
Wow.
Of being stuck over there and forgetting my medicine, not having the medicine, whatever.
So you took the medicine on the way to England, mm-hmm. and you managed to get through it, but it wasn't pleasant. You felt like it wasn't enough.
Well, I thought,
why didn't you take more? You had more.
I don't know if I did or not. I don't remember.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I have anxiety about taking medication. And I thought I was having an adverse effect.
Okay.
But when I look back, I think, oh, it wasn't enough.
Right. That's like, that could fit into your big toe.
Right.
Your big toe will be night-night, but the rest of you will be like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that I was having an adverse effect. So on the way back, I already had built up anxiety anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I think we were just getting ready to take off, and the pilot starts speaking in French. And by the way, all these French people were around us. And this, again, this is
makes sense.
Heathrow leaving England, going mm-hmm. back to the U.S. And it's some kind of religious group of some sort. And I thought, oh, we're on the wrong plane, because the pilot was speaking French. I'm thinking, oh, no. We're going to France. And so, anyway, we're up in the air, and we hit extreme turbulence. Well, to me, it was extreme.
Yeah.
And I look around, and this matriarch of this religious group is sitting next to me, and she's in a panic. And she's, you know, she's going back and forth and crouching, you know, back and forth. And all of these French people were coddling her and coming up to her and soothing her, and their butts are in my face, and I'm just freaking out. And I mean, I literally was slumped in my chair. One of the stewards comes by, and he says to me, because I had Emily next to me.
How old was Emily?
Emily was, I think, 5.
Okay.
And he says to me, "Is she strapped?" You know, in his British accent.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, we're going to crash. I grabbed his arm. And this is so out of character for me. And I don't even remember what I said to him, but it was like a question.
Yeah.
Like, are we going to go down?
Yeah.
And Kenny's in front of me with Ellis.
How old is Ellie?
She was just 2 or just under 2 at the time.
Okay.
And no, she was 2. And anyway, and she was in like a car seat, I think. Well, anyway, so bad. The panic and the flash of heat and the heart, the fear of dying was...
Right, because you thought this plane's going down and you're all going to die.
Yeah.
That's what you thought.
Right, and normally panic attacks are like 10 minutes, 30, but you can have lingering things after 30. Like, that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway... I recall, too, that at one point, Kenny had to go and use the bathroom. And that was after, I guess, like we weren't in turbulence.
Yeah.
But he had Ellie. He wanted me to take Ellie so that he could go. And I was like, no, I can't do it.
Oh, our coffee's here.
That scared me.
Thank you, Muffin.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy your Baileys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ooh, did you put Baileys in there?
Oh, my goodness.
I hope you did.
I'm going to definitely fall asleep if that's the case.
Mm. He did. That's good.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. In mine.
Oh, I do take, yeah, a little bit.
Okay, so you're sitting on the plane. The plane you think is going down. Kenny has to go to the bathroom.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
all heightened up. And
right.
he says, can you watch the 2-year-old while I go to the bathroom?
Right, because first panic attack was I thought we were going to the wrong, you know, I thought we got on the wrong
plane
going to France.
Yeah.
Then the turbulence, it was pretty
bad.
Die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, I thought we were going to crash and die.
Right.
That was that. And then just a couple weeks ago, I mean, I've had minor ones since then, but a couple of weeks ago, I was just under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And Kenny and I were going to our son Patrick's house to just do an enjoyable thing. He was having us over for dinner. But when we got into the car, it was almost like it didn't have to be hunched up anymore. I don't know what it was.
Mm.
But then all of a sudden, boom, my heart was aching. It was hard to breathe. I knew it was a panic attack. But it was funny because I got in the car and so much had happened prior to that. It was almost like getting into the car and leaving I don't know why. I wasn't uptight about getting in the car and going. I guess, though, honestly, if I'm honest, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to need to be social. And because Patrick, it wasn't just our family.
Right. There were other people there.
Yeah.
And you've just, Catherine has been under a lot of stress lately with caring for her mom who has Alzheimer's and then placing her in memory care. Just for anybody that's listening that doesn't follow us regularly, this is where she's at in life.
And it's just, there's so much guilt with that.
Yeah.
Even though your brain tells you that it's the right thing to do, it's the right time. And,
right.
You know, it's daunting.
For sure.
And stressful. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what about the time that you got off the plane and refused to get back on?
Oh, yeah.
Come on now.
I knew there was another.
Share that one. That's a good one.
We had gone to Jamaica.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's another time when it was on the way home.
See?
And it's because, you know, it's one thing when I get there and I don't like it, but I usually, on the trip, I dread almost the whole time getting back on the plane to go home. And like I said, I still have nightmares about it. So we had a connecting flight from Jamaica in, I don't even know. That's how out of it I was. I think maybe Florida.
Okay.
Oh, also, I thought, well, Xanax doesn't work. I'm going to have to use Benadryl because I knew it had the same properties. At least that's what my doctor said. And when I tried the Benadryl and I went walking with you.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I'm going to try this, make sure it works. So you and I went for a walk in, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes.
Okay.
And I was like, when I got home, like, I was out.
But it didn't work on the plane.
Oh, my gosh. No. In fact, because the level of anxiety was so high when I was at the airport.
The adrenaline is running through your body, keeping you awake.
Yeah. And then I'm afraid to take too much.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't want to be having heart problems or problems on the plane, then what?
Right.
Because then I worry about worrying, you know?
Right.
So anyway, so now we were at Jamaica and I couldn't fully enjoy the vacation because I was so wound up about getting back on the plane. We get to the connecting place in, I guess, Florida. I don't even know. And I did refuse to get back on. And Kenny's like, you're getting on it. I wanted to get on a. I wanted to take a bus home.
Yeah, from Florida.
I was determined.
To Illinois. It's like a 18-hour flight or drive.
So? When you're panicking.
Right.
I mean,
how did he get you back on the plane to come back to Chicago?
He was firm.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, no, we're.
Yeah, this is what we're doing.
This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Normally, I would be like, no, we're not. But for some reason, I guess I.
Well, thank God. Know. Thank God that you did it because that would be rough to be just trying to walk or.
Oh, and I can remember walking through the airport to get the connecting flight and being all harried about that too.
Yeah.
Making sure we don't miss the next flight, which I was hoping we would.
Yeah. Okay. But, so all of this was many years ago. Like it was 20 years ago that Ellis was two and you were going to Europe and then whenever it happened with Jamaica. Now here we are in 2024. Mm-hmm. Tell our audience now, what's your strategy for flying? Because you do fly. You don't stay home.
Right.
And we actually have a flight coming up in 10 days or something.
Yeah. Now I know the right dosage that's appropriate for me for an X amount of hours of flight or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I take the prescribed amount that's, you know, adjusted for the flight. I might even have a glass of wine, too.
Yeah.
For extra measure of relaxation.
Yes.
And
that does help.
Oh, you know what, too? So the first time that I, after the Jamaica thing and all of that, Kenny had a business trip to California, and he wanted me to go. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go, but I didn't want to get on the plane. And that was when I really talked to the doctor about, like, hey, before, Xanax either didn't work or I had an adverse effect. So anyway, he adjusted. And that time, we prayed. I said, Kenny, just please pray with me before we go.
Yeah.
And honestly, that really helped too.
Oh, sure.
The Xanax, of course, helped as well. But it just was a, you know, another safety blanket.
Yeah.
So those things combined.
I could see a t-shirt, right? Jesus plus Xanax equals Happy Tracy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm proud of you for? I'm proud of you, Catherine, because you're not allowing an anxiety, a fear, a phobia. You do have an issue with flying. Mm-hmm. You're not allowing it to cripple you. You're not allowing it to, you know, hold you back from flying. You found a way. And good for you that you talked to your doctor. That is so important. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like we take a problem that we have, you know, a physical problem, whatever it is, and we don't talk to the doctor because we think either they're not going to have any solutions for us or, you know, we can work this out ourselves or we don't need anybody else's help.
Yeah. Or I tend to think, well, it didn't work last time he prescribed this. So why would I go back?
Right.
But I like our doctor.
Yeah. You have to have a good physician that you trust anyway in general.
Yeah.
And you might be embarrassed that you have this fear.
Yes. Well, and I know, so at one time I was on a mission trip that I had to, it was to Haiti, and I was a little embarrassed that I had to take Xanax to get on the plane.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt like,
You can't trust in Jesus.
Yeah, I kind
What's
of
wrong
felt
with
like,
your faith?
Right, I felt like, but the friend that drove me to the airport who was heading up this thing, she said, Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
She was very understanding and I felt better.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else that you wanted to add about your experience?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about me.
Yes.
Oh, I have had 3 panic attacks, right? I can't
think. You had 3 major ones.
Yes, I did.
I think you've had mini ones like.
Maybe.
The elevator.
Oh, yeah. We talked about the elevator in one of our earlier episodes. I would call it mild claustrophobia. It's not claustrophobia to the point of I don't like leave the house. I guess that would be agoraphobia. But it's I don't like tight spaces. I don't like tight elevators. And I have always been like that. Like when I was an 18-year-old college freshman, I lived way up on like the 10th floor or something like that. And I took the stairs because college students are idiots and they just jam everybody in and they're like, oh, hold the Vader, you know, all that. And I'm like, no, I'd be okay if there was just a few people. So I did take the elevator from time to time. Mm-hmm. But if it was busy and there was a lot of people around, I'd be like, no, I'm just going to take the stairs.
That being said, though, the first time that you had a panic attack that I'm aware of, I was with you.
Yes.
And you're going to talk about it. I did not know at that point that you didn't like tight spaces.
You know why?
I never picked up
Guess
on that.
Guess what? We lived out in the country, Catherine. We lived out in 2.5-acre lots.
But we had done a lot of things
prior
to that.
Yeah, but we weren't in tight spaces. We weren't in anything tight.
No.
Like a normal elevator
we
is fine. Yeah, but camping is fine. That's fine. That doesn't make me
cramped camper with your family.
But you can get out, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
So what happened with what she's talking about, we were on a girls' trip and we were on our way home from Wisconsin Dells. And it was our church ladies, our peeps, our pals. I mean, we're close. We're tight.
Yeah.
And we all wanted to travel in the same vehicle so we could talk and chat and blah, blah, blah. So we're all in
FOMO.
Yes, we have FOMO. We're all piled into our friend Becky's car, which is like a SUV. And I don't remember how many people were with us, like 7 or something.
It might have been 7.
Yeah. But so on the way home, right, we stopped off at this mall where it was like an outlet mall where you could get deals. And it was around Christmas time. So we were buying stuff. So we were buying Christmas gifts and wrapping paper and all kinds of stuff. And so I had volunteered once we got all of our out of the mall and we're getting back in the car, I'll sit in the back part of the SUV because I didn't want others to have to get back there. No. So I was going to just be the martyr.
Take one for the team.
I'd be the backseat martyr. And I thought I could do it.
I'll just get on my phone.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Except if you've ever seen E.T.
That's exactly what I was hoping you would say.
If you've ever seen E.T.
That's what you looked like.
And E.T. is in that closet. And they're trying to hide him from the mom. And all you can see is his head. And around him is all these stuffed animals. That's what I looked like in the back seat.
You did.
It was my face, and then there was all these packages from floor
luggage,
to ceiling.
Food, even.
Everything.
Yeah.
I couldn't move. I couldn't wiggle around. I couldn't see out the windows. You know, it was tight.
Yeah.
And even though they packed me in there like E.T., because I had to get in first, I still thought, I'll be fine, you know, for 4 hours or whatever,
four to
5 hours that it would take us, you know, to get to Chicago. All right. So we're on the interstate, maybe 10 minutes, you know, whatever. Yeah. It was a short period of time. We weren't going very far. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to feel the pressure. Mm-hmm. I was starting to feel pressure on my chest, mm-hmm. the physical weight. I couldn't breathe. And I was panicking. But I didn't know what to do right away. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so I'm back there and I just go, guys.
When I heard you say that.
You knew.
I knew. I thought, oh my God.
What's wrong?
What's wrong? Yeah. You literally, guys.
Yeah. It was terrible. I was just trying to keep it together. Mm-hmm. And we're in an interstate.
Yeah.
And our friend Becky's driving and she's like, okay, I'm going to pull over as soon as I can get an exit.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to pull over right on the interstate. And I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to breathe. And then even once we found an exit, which took a little while, but we find an exit, she pulls over, she stops the vehicle. I'm still feeling all this pressure. And I have to wait for the other 4 or 5 people to get out.
Right, before you can.
So they could extradite me from the, you know, get the jaws of life and get me out of those packages.
Yeah.
And I had to take a few breaths. And then our dear friend Linda, she climbed back there.
I know.
And she did it.
She did. I think she was the oldest, too.
Yeah.
And she had knee issues.
Yes. And she had said at the very beginning that she would sit back there.
Yeah, she did.
And be the backseat martyr. But I wanted to spare her from that. Mm. Anyway, thank you, Becky, for saving my life. And thank you, Linda, for being the backseat martyr. After that experience, that was my very first panic attack in a tight space. After that experience, I had another one in a tight space in my son's car. He was driving a Mustang, and it was really small and tight. Mm-hmm. And it had been in an accident previous to our buying it, and it had been crushed a little bit, so it was extra small. Anyway, I had to drive that car because he had my car for some reason, and I had a panic attack inside the Mustang.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I had that. Then I had a third one inside an MRI tube.
Yeah.
I had had MRIs previous to these other attacks. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'll be fine for the MRI. I was not fine. Mm-hmm. I was crying. I was there with and the tech, she was like, oh, you're going to do it. Because I kept saying to her, I don't think I can do it. Because I had these two other experiences with this panic attack in these tight spaces. Mm-hmm. And now all that was flooding my head. Where previous to that, she goes, oh, you've done these MRIs before. I go, I know.
Mm-hmm. But see, now that makes me mad or defensive for you that she said, oh, you're going to do
it. Yeah, I think she was trying to give me confidence.
Probably, but sometimes.
But she couldn't see what was happening
on the inside
in my head. Mm-hmm. And she had already started the IV because it was an MRI with contrast.
Yeah.
So she already did all that. And she gets me in there and she gives me that little button that you're supposed to press, you know? And I'm like, oh, press the button. And I'm crying.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Bawling because I feel like a baby.
Aww.
And then she was compassionate. She felt bad.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't like, you idiot. So the way that I've overcome that, though, mm-hmm. is I spoke to my doctor. I go to my doctor once a year for general physical. Everyone should do that. Mm-hmm. If you are hearing my voice and you do not go to the doctor once a year, please start.
Yeah.
Just go for a physical. Build a relationship with a physician who's going to follow you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went for my annual physical. And I just told my doctor what I just told you.
Yeah.
I said, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And she said, it's okay. She said, here's what we're going to do. She prescribed the Xanax mm-hmm. and she said, try this. And she gave me the dosage and all that. And she said, if that doesn't work, then let me know. Because then we would take another step and maybe do some exposure therapy. Or she would refer me to a counselor, a professional, who would probably put a bag over my head or something.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, exposure therapy is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, actually, when we go over that, I'll have a brief thing to say about that.
Yeah, so hold that in your thought. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned, friends, because we're going to get to some solutions. But now I just had an MRI like almost 2 weeks ago. I had, no, 1 week ago, whatever it was. Yeah. It was on Monday. I had the MRI and I was able to get through it with the right amount of Xanax. And I'm fine with taking Xanax once a year for an MRI.
Yeah, right. Also, tell them you did try a different medicine first. That
right.
Was, I remember that.
Yes, I did.
And that did not
work
for you.
No, didn't do
so
a thing.
So don't give up, folks, if you try a medicine that your doctor prescribed and it doesn't work. Just keep trying. Because
yeah, and wasn't it Valium that they gave me? Something like that.
That's what you had said. I think it was a generic form of something. I don't know.
Whatever it was, it didn't touch anything. Like, I felt nothing.
Yeah.
I was like, I might as well not even taken it. I didn't feel any different. I didn't feel calm, sleepy, nothing.
Yeah, that's how I was on the plane yeah. to England.
But now that I have the correct dosage and I have what I need, my doctor is totally fine. And she gives me a prescription for just two pills. You know, and mm-hmm. and then, well, we adjusted the dosage a little bit on our own because, you know, I was like, well, I've gained a little weight. So I should probably take a little more. But anyway, it just got me through it.
Yeah.
Because I do these annual MRIs because I'm a breast cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give up that really good test
yeah.
to make sure if I get breast cancer again, we want to find it as soon as possible.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And that's your priority.
Yeah, it
to
is.
To get through that. So
it is.
Very right. good.
Yeah. Yay us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
and
now
I wanted to say, too, that mm-hmm. there's a difference between having panic, you know, random panic attacks and a panic disorder. We're not addressing panic disorder. I don't even know how to begin with that
some of the research that I did for today, they said that most people, they didn't give a statistic or a number, but they said most people will have one or two panic attacks in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the right circumstances. And it comes out of the blue.
Yes, right. It exactly. Actually, right here, what I have in front of me says panic disorder occurs when a person has frequent worry or fear of future panic attacks
okay.
or when they change their behavior in order to avoid attacks, such as avoiding a feared situation.
Right. So in our case, you're still flying. I'm still getting MRIs. And by the way, I also fly with Xanax in my bra. I do. Because
it absorbs right into the system.
No, it's so crazy. I told my doctor that I had these three panic attacks, two in vehicles and mm-hmm. one in the MRI tube. And I said, I've not had a panic attack on a flight,
mm-hmm.
but I'm fearful that in the cramped space, like what if I'm using the bathroom and I have a panic attack in the airplane?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if I'm in the middle seat and having a panic attack? What do I do? So she told me, just take Xanax with you. And if you need it, take it. So I tuck the whole bottle into my bra because I don't want to just put the pill in there. It'll get lost.
Okay. So what I do about that, and I didn't even talk to my doctor. I just knew I am not going to be stuck in a situation of turbulence or something where I need another dose of Xanax or whatever. So you know how when you go through TSA
yeah.
and they check you and you have to take everything off? Well, normally I have the Xanax in like a little, either it's prescription bottle or another little small bottle.
Uh-huh.
But it's in one
like a fanny pack type
thing? Pack or the thing that goes across, a sling. But you have to take that off. And sometimes if we sit in the very front row, they won't let you have any of that.
That's even why though you should use your bra.
Well, what I do is usually I have on a pair of like pants that'll have a small little pocket. And I'll tuck it in there. It calms me to know that it's there.
Exactly.
So I don't necessarily have to take it, but in the event that it's needed,
exactly.
it just feels like a comfort. And my doctor had told me that a long time ago. He said, some people are fine just knowing it's there in case of an emergency,
yes.
like the pull cord.
It is totally fine. I've never had to take it out of my bra and consume the Xanax,
mm-hmm.
but knowing it's there, just, I don't know. Let's me just enjoy my flight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Let's move on. Let's go on to, like, what are some other solutions? What can we
okay.
share with friends? If they're relating to what we're saying and they're like, oh, my gosh, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
We're telling them definitely go to your doctor. What have you got there that
okay.
we can
By
share?
The way, I got this from my therapist. I just started seeing a counselor yesterday, and we talked about the recent panic attack I had. So she sent me this this flyer. So it's like a trusted source. One of the treatments is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is nicknamed CBT. And it's so cognitive behavioral therapy is a common and well-supported treatment for panic attacks and panic disorder. It works by identifying and changing unhealthy thinking patterns that trigger the panic attack. So you kind of get into the source. Mm-hmm. The benefits of it can be long lasting.
Yeah.
So that's one treatment.
Now, okay, I've done that treatment before.
You have?
I have, many years ago.
Okay.
In counseling, you know, with a counselor, and they take you back to like whatever they think the trigger is of the experience that you're having. And then they help you like to reframe it, like you're almost like
rewiring
redoing it
yourself.
Exactly. Because your brain creates these pathways and then your thoughts just automatically just default into these pathways. And so you're like rewiring your brain and it does work. I believe it does work.
Yeah, I had the little zappy thing on my head before where it's, and I swear by it because I had it for, it was like a fear of, it was, gosh, over 10 years ago now, maybe 12.
We sound and like
I know, we sound like a couple of
kids. We do. We sound like these two idiots.
I remember being so desperate, and I remember thinking, oh, my God, I'm like drinking the Kool-Aid here. I've got this thing on my head, and I go to see the counselor. Mostly, I'm just sitting there with this zapper on my head, but you don't feel any zapping at, you don't feel
was
anything.
Was it a tinfoil hat, Catherine? And I recommended the counselor to you. That's the same one that I went to.
I know, but she didn't have the zappy thing on the head. But I remember, oh my gosh. But it was
so funny.
Oh, God.
You know what?
Anyway, but I don't have that problem anymore.
See? Solution.
Like, my brain doesn't go that way. Like, it was a fear of money.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like this fear that we weren't going to have enough and blah, blah, blah. I don't.
Yeah. You know, that's so awesome and good for us that when we have a problem, we find a solution.
I'm not going to suffer. I'm going to say, yeah, I got a problem.
Oh,
sign me up.
Please fix it. I'm an idiot.
Jesus is not back yet.
Yeah, the jibby.
Give me that medicine.
That's Catherine is referencing both of us have had different bouts with depression. And so
you tell?
We would call our antidepressant our jibby, and it stands for Jesus isn't back yet.
Yes.
So if you need a little fun nickname for your antidepressant medication, just call it your jibby.
Yeah.
All right. What other
solutions? Speaking of another treatment, medication. Medication for panic attacks can act as a short-term treatment for severe cases. Because medication does not treat the underlying issues that cause panic disorders, it should be accompanied by another form of treatment, such as psychotherapy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you talked about exposure therapy. That is another treatment.
Yeah, it is.
I thought that that was, like, you know, primitive. I didn't know that that's still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it says here, during exposure therapy, the patient is intentionally exposed to the symptoms of panic in a safe environment. As exposure continues, the symptoms become more familiar and less terrifying. Exposure therapy may also involve gradual exposure to feared situations. So even though I take Xanax before I get on a plane, I swear that has helped in regards to, like, besides the medicine, facing that fear of getting on the plane, I feel like I don't need as much, you know? I almost feel like I might be okay without it, but I'm afraid to put myself in that position.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it feels like exposure therapy.
It is exposure therapy.
It feels like it.
Because you're doing it. You're doing the thing that triggers your brain, and you're getting through it. Now, if you wanted to eliminate the Xanax altogether, then just try very gradually doing less. Like, just maybe a quarter of a pill less or something, you know?
Right.
Just very gradually.
Yeah, it's part of me thinks that maybe I could, but then there's that other part of me. It's like, oh, I do not want to be in a state of panic.
Right. But the good news is you could have the additional dose right there. And you just, if you really need it, you just take it. And it takes a little bit for it to take effect. But you know that the relief is coming. You can try it.
Yeah.
You could try it when we travel to Virginia.
I don't know, because then you're going to be stuck with somebody that's...
It's okay, because the one time you took the Xanax and had the wine, and I had to buckle your seatbelt because the flight attendant was like, aren't you going to buckle? And Catherine is flopping the things all around. I'm like, I'll get it. She was out.
I was, yes. Incapable.
Okay, I watched a video of somebody being exposed to... the claustrophobia.
Yeah.
Okay. So they literally put a bag over her head.
Oh.
To make a tight space, you know. Gosh. And then another thing they had her do was like get into a box.
Oh, well,
like
I
a
could
coffin
see that.
Type box, yeah. Like a box.
Okay, that I could see. The bag over the head, no.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, gosh, that just seems.
Well, it was barbaric. All controlled, obviously, and it was all safe in terms of she was. The person who was suffering with claustrophobia was the one who was directing how far are we going to go, you know?
Yeah.
And so the counselor was a professional. They were, you know, showing how this is how it could work in the clinical setting.
Hmm.
Interesting.
There would have to be a big trust level for me to go do that. Yeah. Big trust level.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the last one here is relaxation techniques. Much like how muscles become stronger with exercise, the body's relaxation response can be improved with practice. Frequent use of relaxation techniques such as deep breathing,
yes,
meditation, and progressive muscle relaxation can help to combat the panic attacks.
Yeah. I think that deep breathing is something that we need help with on a regular basis.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That is definitely... I never, you know, my dad was real big on that.
On breathing?
Like, oh my gosh.
Breathing
is
nice.
It used to kind of drive me crazy. Like, really? I mean, nobody talks about breathing, you know, but it is a huge thing, you know.
It is, because we have tension in our body from head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hold tension, no matter where it is.
Pelvic floor.
Yes. Yes. Then your body, you may not be aware of it. You may be.
Totally not aware
You're
of
holding
it.
Tension and mm-hmm. you're not even aware of it, but you do have some control.
Yeah.
But you have to stop and think and become aware. And breathe and release.
Yeah, and guys lifting, or even women, lifting heavy weights, if they're not breathing right, it can make their gut, like, I don't know, go out or do weird things. Something about their gut.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, what else? Anything
That's
else?
It. Yeah. Okay. That's a simple one.
Well, I think that we've given a lot of good tips. Did you have any other medical things for people to do if they have panic attacks?
Well, it does say to go to your doctor. Yeah. I don't think this said that on here, but go to your doctor first because he or she may need to run some tests, you know, blood work. And I just recently had all of that done because of the panic attack. Because there might be thyroid levels off. There could be some other contributing factors to that. So I would start there. But if you're in a real serious issue, you know, like you don't have time for a doctor, then I would definitely call a counseling office because they could probably get you in faster than a doctor can.
I would imagine that with today's resources being online, mm-hmm. you could also find some support online.
Oh, yeah.
With like a televisit or a computer visit or a Zoom call, whatever it is.
Yeah. Make sure it's a credible place, though. Don't just do a, you know, willy-nilly support group where you might get some other nutso telling you something.
I've heard of this betterhelp.com.
Okay.
That's a...
Oh, I think I heard of that,
too. Yeah, they've been advertised all around. And I think that's only if you cannot, like, okay, if you're listening and you're like, yeah, I have panic attacks. Okay, so you want to get some Xanax or something, right? If you don't have a local doctor that you go to and you're not going to find one, then look online to see if you can find some support there. definitely seek out the support of a local doctor that you go to once a year, because the panic attack is the least of your worries if you're not going to a doctor once a year.
That's true.
Need to be inside of a doctor's office once a year so that they can recommend this or that, you know, especially as we get older.
Well, right. And if you get a good doctor, he or she is going to do a full exam and figure out, hey, you know, this might be contributing to your racing heart.
Yeah.
And it's not just the panic, but and enhance these things. So
yeah, and if you can't afford, if you don't have insurance and you cannot afford to go to the doctor, check local government sponsored resources like your state or your county or your village or whatever. There might be a clinic that is like a state sponsored clinic where you can at least go for a checkup.
Yeah.
Have your blood pressure taken, stuff like that.
Right. Excuse me. My goodness.
Okay. Anything else that you wanted to share there?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, that was so fun.
Yeah, I woke up too.
Oh, see, it's the coffee. Let's talk about God's word. How about that?
Yeah, let's definitely.
We've got three short verses to share with you today that we hope will help you in this area of panic attacks. The first one I want to share is Isaiah 41:10. That is my favorite verse in the whole Bible. And it says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Love that verse.
That is absolutely, when you really marinate in that and you believe God's word, that is very helpful. Ever since I met you, you had been, you know, I know that scripture because of you.
Yeah.
Because you say it and so often. But, and I have found myself needing and using that one as well.
I was very young when I memorized that verse. I was in college, so maybe 19, something like that. And then when I was 28 years old, so 11 years later, whatever, 8, 9 years later, whatever it is, the math.
Math.
Yeah. All those years later, my mom was dying.
Yeah.
And I was on my way to be with her. And we knew this was the end because she had cancer. It was really bad. And I had not looked at that verse in all those years. And I had two little kids. I mean, my life was busy. I wasn't like, you know, memorizing scripture and looking at it and all of that. And that verse popped into my head, and I just kept on quoting it all the way for an hour and a half drive to my parents' home to say my final goodbyes to my mom, because I was scared to death.
Yeah.
I was like, this sucks.
I would have been too.
I don't want this to happen.
Yeah.
But God got us through it. Okay, Hebrews 13, verse 6 says, "The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?" I love that verse. Yeah.
Me too. And 2 Timothy?
2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For the spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline."
Yes.
Very good. So, all good.
So the other version, the ESV, says self-control.
Yeah.
And the reason that I liked that version for this is because that we can have self-control.
We
and
can.
It's just a nice reminder. So, I'm going to memorize that one.
That's a great one. And you know what? It self-control doesn't mean like mind over matter necessarily. Maybe it means you go to the doctor, you get the steps, you go through the steps. Maybe you do have to take the Xanax. So what?
Yeah.
That's what it's for. You're not abusing it. You're using it to cope with life.
Yeah. I've talked to my doctor about that too, because I have a fear of
addiction.
Abusing and getting addicted. But we've talked through that as well. And so that's also why I'm seeing
your counselor.
A counselor, because I want to do both.
You know, one thing that I wanted to mention that I got out of a YouTube video, and the YouTube video is called How to Stop Panic Attacks.
Okay.
Okay. And it's put out by the OCD and Anxiety Channel. And this guy, I listened to it a couple times. He talked about reenacting your trigger. So in my case, because I had my first panic attack inside of Becky's car.
Yeah, he wants you to get into a box.
He wants me to, he wants me to get back into Becky's car.
Okay.
And get surrounded by the stuff.
Okay.
And get on the interstate, you know, with all the people in the car. And then feel what I felt. And then remind myself. Like, you're not supposed to distract yourself at all. You're not supposed to, like, try not to look at it or whatever. You're supposed to face it and feel what you felt. Okay, I feel cramped. I feel like I can't get out of here. I feel like I can't breathe or whatever. And then just tell your mind you're okay. You're not cramped. You're okay. You know, and you can even calmly say, guys, right? Mm-hmm. So you're basically, you tell yourself, I might have a panic attack. It might get as bad as it was the first time, but I'm going to face it. And then you try to like back it up. You'll have to watch this video and listen to this professional talk about it.
It is exposure therapy that he's talking about. I suppose, though, if you're doing a practice run, there'd be some kind of safety net there, knowing that it's just a practice run and that you could put a stop to it immediately.
Right, because everybody knows what you're doing. You're not, you know, it's not like a random thing, because when the panic attack comes on at first, it can just come out of the blue. It's very random. You were not expecting it. And now your body is like, ugh,
mm-hmm.
fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to mention that.
Okay.
So again, it's called How to Stop Panic Attacks. It's on YouTube, and it's the OCD and Anxiety channel.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy and he does offer some support online. So if you're looking for that, you can get it. Yeah. All right. Finally, call to action. If you are suffering from panic attacks, or if you're fearful that you might have a panic attack, call your doctor. That's your call to action.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a doctor, get one.
Yeah.
Please do.
Or if you know somebody who is going through this and they don't have the strength or the you know, wherewithal to do it, maybe do it for them.
Yeah, help them out.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff, Catherine.
All right.
Well, you've been listening to the Life Happens, Life Anyway podcast. I'm still comedian Tracy DeGraff.
I'm still Catherine.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.